o'clock, 10:15, having arrived, we will start the, we won't quite call it to order yet. We do not have a quorum. As soon as we do, we'll break in when we have a quorum, and there'll be a few housekeeping issues that we'll take care of. But before the committee today, we have House File 63. Representative Anderson. Why don't we do this? Mr. Michael, who would handle this in the House, in-house research? Ms. Manzi? Maybe we can have Ms. Manzi give a brief overview, and maybe a page or someone can go out and try and find the bill's author. That would be helpful. Apparently, she was just wrapping up state government finance, apparently. But Ms. Manzi, if you could give a brief description of the bill, and then hopefully we'll get a quorum so that we can take care of a few administrative things, and then we'll visit about the bill before us. So, Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 63, and there's an author's technical amendment, which Mr. Rubis has, the A2 amendment that makes some clarifications to it, has the effect of providing for a 7.85% maximum rate on active pass-through income. And the definition of active pass-through income is from a business in which the taxpayer materially participates, and it can be a sole proprietorship, farm, S corporation, or partnership. It's somewhat analogous to the maximum rates on capital gains at the federal level, which some of you may be familiar with. And it simply provides that this particular type of income has a preferential rate relative to other types of income, which would still be subject to the existing 9.85% top rate. And then it makes a corresponding change to the marriage credit. The marriage credit is in place to offset marriage penalties resulting from our rate and bracket structure, in which the brackets for married joint filers are less than twice the width of the bracket for single filers. And when you provide a preferential rate for a certain type of income, then you can either, depending on the taxpayer and the spouse's situation and which of them has this type of income, you can either reduce or increase the marriage penalties. So there needs to be a corresponding change to that credit to keep it in line with what's really a new rate structure.
Okay, if you could pause there just a second. Thank you, Ms. Manzi, and we'll continue. We have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. I would like to take care of a few housekeeping issues. First of all, having voted on the prevailing side, I will move that we bring the minutes of January 13th, 2015 back before us for a very simple change. We noticed that on the top there where it says January 13th, it said 2014. And we didn't catch it, so we've corrected it to say 2015. So I will move the minutes as amended. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Torkelson moves the minutes of January 14th, 2015. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much. While we're waiting for the author, we'll continue with Ms. Manzi in a second, but I would just like to visit with the committee just a bit about two issues. One is, members, if you have cities you represent that are interested in local option sales taxes or need work on a TIF district, please set up a stop by the office. Let's visit about it. There'll be a bit of a change in policy here from 4 years ago. We're going to need buy-in from the local author to do it. So for the roadies and groupies that are here, if you have a hot TIF district issue, you better get your legislators on board so that they can bring it. So we'll want to respect the various legislators in their districts on some of these issues. I'll certainly discuss these things and Of course, they go to property tax division first, but if you have some issues such as that, or if you don't support it, but it's okay if somebody else goes ahead with it, we'll want to have that discussion offline. We learn by doing over the years, and the policy, we have no rules, of course, in this committee, but that being said, let's get these in. If you have some that you need to work with, let's get them in as soon as we possibly can, so that we can get those over to Chair Drazkowski's committee so his committee can do the due diligence on them. So with that, any questions on that as far as TIF or LOST? Chair Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like we're kind of killing time anyhow for Representative Anderson to finish her work in her other meeting. And I know she's busy as a chair, and she'll be here, I'm sure, as soon as she can. So I'll just take the opportunity to say, you know, with all respect to Representative Drazkowski, you know, I have found, and I think maybe the two of you chairs might want to think about this, you know, we've been doing this process as you and I have been alternating gavels, where we send these bills down to property taxes, the TIF bills, and honestly, most members couldn't care less about them and don't pay much attention to them and, in fact, don't understand them. And that's bipartisan. And I, you know, in the past, there had been a working group on TIF sometimes. I think Chair Abrams started it, and I think Chair Krenke continued it, and I did for a while. And then I couldn't get members, even four or five members, to be interested, even to weed through them. And so, you know, I hope both of the chairs consider what is an effective way to understand those bills. It just takes a lot of time to do those hearings and property taxes, and they come and you hear them again. And then most members really don't track them. And one in particular I noticed last year that I was part of assembling, as were you, Mr. Chair, in Tax Conference Committee, as we worked through one of the local units of government and trading through some provisions with the Senate. They have since gone back to their local community, and their school board said no. So the bill we worked really hard on, the local unit of government didn't even pass it, much less, you know, the legislators had different views. So, you know, without naming the city, I just, you know, I would expect that's going to come back to you, but I don't have an answer. I just think as a process, it's a difficult set of issues with not a lot of legislators very engaged because it's pretty dry. Often I found that legislators who have been formerly elected officials, former city council members and mayors on both sides of the aisle tend to be probably the most engaged in those bills, but it's just a thought. Just to bring it up.
No, thank you very much. And at this rate, there won't be a very big TIF bill by any means because we're not getting a whole lot. So I just want to let folks know that get those in if you have something so we can get to work on them because the calendar flies by very quickly. And again, I want to be clear that if a member in their district, if you don't support that TIF district, a couple things can happen. First of all, they've got to get your support before it comes here. Or if you just really don't want your fingerprints on it, but you don't care if somebody else does, I need to know that so we can move forward. So with that, thank you, Chair Lincheski, for that. Okay, Representative Anderson, welcome to your committee. Representative Anderson moves House File 63. And members, we're not taking any votes on bills themselves today. This would be laid over for possible inclusion. That'll be the motion after we've heard it. But as another, having no rules, one thing we do in tax committee as a rule is we let authors get their bills in the shape they would prefer so that we can work off them the way they want to. And then this, my intention on this one would be to obviously be laid over for possible inclusion. So Chair Anderson moves the H006382 amendment to get the bill in the shape she prefers. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We have the bill before us as amended. And Ms. Manzi was giving a brief overview of it, but now your bill here, why don't you describe your bill and we'll take a look at it. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for being late. I was over in the Capitol taking a tour of the construction project, and I think that we have them convinced that the room 15 will become the House Tax Committee room forever. So I'm helping you out. So
thank you for all you do for Minnesota.
There we go. Members, thanks for your patience too as well. My apologies for being late. On this piece of legislation. We just had to make some fixes just to make sure that we had a revenue note that you guys would be able to take a look at and consider as you consider the possibility of laying this over in the omnibus tax bill. And what this does is this is pass-through, this recognizes pass-through income for those S corporations that, as we have heard, no doubt from your constituents, have experienced some growing pains in dealing with the top tax rate that was instituted in the 2013 tax bill. I know that we have a couple of those folks that represent those small businesses, those mom and pop shops that are here today to give some testimony. And given that I was late, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to turn that over to them so they can speak to some of the examples that they have experienced through the small businesses that they represent.
Okay, thank you, Chair Anderson. I have on my list testifying on behalf of the bill, Mr. David Skilbred, Mr. Mike Hickey, Ms. Beth Cadoon will be testifying with Mike Jorgensen, and then I have a Deb McMillan listed here from the Twin West Chambers. Before we start, I think these are all folks that are supporting the Anderson bill as amended. Is there anyone in the audience that wish to testify with concerns? Okay, then we'll hear from these folks, and we'll go from there. So, Mr. Skilbred, if you could please join us, sir.
Good morning, members.
Welcome to the Tax Committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is David Skilbred. I represent the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota, about 300 privately held banks in the state, throughout the state. I'd like to say basically about two things about this. Very quickly. Number one, without getting into the fourth tier or not, the fourth tier, when you, I imagined a family, a two-working family, which most of our families are these days, and I imagined that they have pretty good jobs and their incomes are pretty sizable up there, but they're not in the fourth tier. But one of them is starting a business or has a business or is trying to expand a business. And in the scenario that I had, only $112,000 net profit from that business were to kick that family from the third tier to the fourth tier. And those are the customers that we work with, that we make loans to, that we help try to grow their business. And that is a hindrance and a blockage for those folks as they try to make that business grow. Secondly, with respect to the banks themselves that we represent, about three out of four banks in Minnesota are S-Corps, so this does affect them. Many of them won't be affected regardless of what you do, but the if they get assistance from a deduction in this tax, that assistance then turns into a dollar that will be multiplied because we can use it as loans in the bank. So for if we keep $1, if we gain a dollar out of taxes, and if we reinvest that dollar into the business, we can loan that dollar out nine times to other loans and other businesses and other families, and I think that's a pretty good deal for your dollar. And the so that would be very helpful to the community, and it would be helpful to the customers that we serve. And after that, I'll stand for questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Skilbred. Questions for Mr. Skilbred? Chair Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, Mr. Skilbred, I've got a friend in St. Cloud who owns a small part, I think it's like 10% of a community bank, small community bank in St. Cloud, and he complains to me all the time about how he has this income passed through to him, but in his case, he actually never gets any cash or salary. He's not an employee or anything out of the bank. And I guess I'm wondering if you could talk a little about how something like that might happen. I assume the bank is keeping their earnings in the bank to expand, and yet he is still being taxed even though he doesn't actually get any money out of the bank. Could you elaborate on how something like that might happen?
Representative Knobloch, Chairman Davids, that scenario is referred to shadow income. What happens with these pass-through entities is that when the business income is determined at the end of the year, the owners have the decision to give dividends or to reinvest in the business or a combination of both. If the money goes into the business, 100% of the income, the owners of that business are still taxed even though they don't get a dime. If they receive a dividend, then they pay tax and they add it to their other income, and it turns out just normally as it should. But that's a very good point, and we feel that that's an unfair situation that occurs, because why should you be taxed on money you don't get?
Chair, thank you, Mr. Skilbert.
Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Mr. Skilbert, how does this affect farmers? I have several who not only farm, but then they've started seed companies. How does that combination of income work for them? And then ultimately, how does that affect their borrowing power?
To Mr. Skilbred or possibly Ms. Manzi? Or Mr. Skilbred?
I'd rather have the farm folks speak for themselves, but what I noticed that was in the bill, and I had two thoughts. And the first thought is that some farmers have an exception when it comes to the cap on the estate tax. And in this case, they are included in this, and not surprisingly, because many of those are organized as pass-through businesses, LLCs, and so my hunch is that they would be affected just like any other business that's organized as a pass-through.
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I had thought perhaps Mr. Skilbred would speak to the effect of this on farmers' ability to borrow, which I won't be able to have any opinions on. But this maximum rate in House File 63 applies to all forms of business income as long as the taxpayer is actively involved in running the business. So I don't think it would apply in the case of Representative Knobloch's constituent, who is not actively involved in running the bank that he referred to, but in the case of a farmer who is actively farming and has income in the fourth tier, then the maximum rate that would apply to that individual's business income, pass-through income, however they're organized in the fourth tier, would be 7.85% rather than 9.85%. Any other income they had in the fourth tier would continue to be at the 9.85% rate.
Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Manzi. That's very helpful.
Representative Laffer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Skilbred, I'm just still trying to understand your example, because you said that, you know, this person starts to you know, create their business, their bank, and they get an extra $112,000, and you know, the 2% difference is about a little over $2,000 of tax reduction, and yet you implied that there was just going to be this big turnover of that money and have a big economic impact. But as I understand it, would be a relatively small amount of money. But am I misunderstanding the difference of that 2% on that extra $112,000?
Mr. Skilbred.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, if I could wave a magic wand, I would say that all active business income reinvested into the business be tax-free. That would have a huge impact on the businesses, and a much greater one than this bill proposes. But this bill takes the right step in the right direction, we believe, and it allows and responds to those smaller businesses with those two working family heads who are trying to make a go of it, and now they kind of slip into that top tier. And I don't believe those with the 2% that was really aiming at.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I still don't see the big economic impact of that $2,000 of annual savings. And, you know, once you've gotten up to over $250,000, you know, $2,000 has less meaning than perhaps the employees who earn a lot less in that business. Because I would assume when you're up at that level, generally you have employees. And so it's hard for me to understand the economic impact that was portrayed.
Well, Representative Loeffler, $2,000 here and $2,000 there, pretty soon you have $4,000. Representative Loeffler, follow-up?
No, thank you.
Okay. Let's go to other questions. Representative Ancells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in why the author would be interested in tax cut for businesses at $250,000 rather than what is much more normal, much more common in greater Minnesota, which is filing jointly business income drastically less than $250,000. In fact, the average income in one of the counties I represent is about a little over $40,000. So why wouldn't we direct tax relief to those filers rather than filers at $250,000 and above? And wouldn't we catch and provide relief to more small businesses with my approach as opposed to a floor of $250,000.
Thank you, Representative Ancells. And if we could, members, if we could speak right into the microphone, please.
Yep.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Ancells. A couple of things. We're sitting right now in the middle of the metropolitan area, and the cost of doing business here is significantly higher than the cost of business is doing in maybe Grand Rapids or Tower or any of the communities north of St. Cloud in that area. And so they have different challenges than they do in greater Minnesota. And the small businesses that I represent in Plymouth have those challenges. And I can't tell you how many times in my door knocking experience I run across the mom and pop shop. Maybe it's just them, you know, it's the wife and the husband together that are doing their business. Sometimes they have a couple of partners, maybe they have 35 employees, but they're a small business. And for them, it's really easy to go to another state. And this one couple, I came to their door, and the fellow said to me, you know, it may not seem like a lot of money to you, but this is the straw that breaks the camel's back. And that we don't see a return on our investment that we'd like to see. And it's much easier for us to not even have to have an office space. All they need is a laptop. And they can go to any state in this country and do the same business that they're doing right here in the state of Minnesota. And it's hard for me to look them in the eye and say, you should pay $2,000 more, and you should have to lay off another person from your operation, or you're going to be taking home less to invest back into your company. That's really hard for me to keep saying to them year after year. So that's why I have this bill at that level. Try to recognize that our state is a very diverse state, and our success depends on the success of greater Minnesota, where you live, and the success of the metropolitan area as well. We are all in this together, and hopefully we can put together a plan that reflects the needs of the entire state and make sure that our economic engine for our small businesses, which are, by the way, the number one economic engine for this state, that we can keep them moving forward. So that is my goal, but I am happy to take in any recommendations that you have and put them under consideration. So if you want to talk offline after committee, be happy to kind of get your input on that.
Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate the explanation. I've been listening to claims that businesses are leaving Minnesota. I've been listening to that for 50 years, and there really and truly is no net loss ever. So I really disregard that. I would say Minnesota is diverse, and the income disparity between Greater Minnesota and Metropolitan Minnesota is wide, and in Greater Minnesota, we try to encourage entrepreneurship and business startups, this legislation will do nothing to encourage small businesses to form in Greater Minnesota, and really and truly is not very friendly to Greater Minnesota, but we'll see how this goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ansel. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I know that you and I agree on the issue of the tobacco tax, and when there were efforts here in the last legislative cycle to increase taxes on cigarettes and liquor and whatnot. And the number one thing we talked about is that taxes influence behavior. And we've seen that in the state of Minnesota, where fewer and fewer people are smoking. And that's a direct correlation to the fact that we have a high tax on cigarettes and so forth. So if it influences behavior on that front, you know that it's going to influence behavior on the business side as well. And that's just a reality of tax policy in general. So I apologize, Mr. Chair, for going over my time.
Representative Ansels?
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Moline, and then if it's okay with the committee, we'll direct questions to Mr. Skilbred, and then we'll go down the list, and then we'll open up for questions at the end. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson, and I represent portions of St. Louis, and I share Itasca County with my good friend, Representative Ansels, and the median family income in Itasca County is $44,000. The median family income in St. Louis County is $47,000. So pretty far away from the tax bracket that you're talking about here in your bill, and the comments by the testifier of those families that are trying to start up a business and maybe get kicked into the top tier. I can't imagine that happening very frequently in the districts that Representative Ansels and I represent, but I was especially interested in your comments about how the cost of business is greater in the metropolitan area, the cost of doing business. And, I would just suggest to you that you take a drive down our main streets and see what our local businesses, the challenges that they struggle, and to find out if the cost of business, doing business really is less in Greater Minnesota, because I'm just not sure that it is. Representative Anderson, I'm really interested in if you can provide any further information, and I know you told Representative Ansels that you were going to continue these discussions, but when you're talking about counties where the median family income is, a third of what we're talking about here in your bill, how do you imagine that this is going to help economic development in Greater Minnesota and help our families who are only making $44,000 a year? I mean, obviously they're not getting any sort of tax relief in this bill, so do you foresee this, helping out people in Greater Minnesota whose income is substantially lower?
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Moline. I can speak to Representative Dan Fabian. He talks a lot on the House floor about businesses like Polaris and businesses like DigiKey, and these are all great businesses that are housed in Greater Minnesota. And the tax policies that we pass here in this state have an impact on their ability to stay here in Minnesota and be successful and provide the very good jobs. You look at Marvin Windows in War Road, Minnesota. All of those businesses have a huge impact on the employment that they offer to Minnesotans, in greater Minnesota in particular. And I was visiting with a fellow. This was last year. He's actually from Roseau. And he talked about the fact that he had wanted to start up a business here in Minnesota, had started the process. And as he got into it, the costs were so significantly higher to do a business here in the state of Minnesota that he wound up opening up that business in North Dakota instead. And he lives still in Minnesota, and he says, I'd love to be able to provide those jobs here in Minnesota. He had 10 people that he employed, but it just was not economically feasible given our tax structure that we have in this state. So these are good examples of businesses in greater Minnesota that would benefit from legislation like this that makes it easier for small businesses to start, to grow, and to stay in the state of Minnesota, and I'd ask for your support.
Representative Moline.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, perhaps we just have a different definition of what is a small business, but in northern Minnesota, we consider employers like Polaris and Marvin Windows to be big businesses. Those are large employers. Those are not small businesses. We definitely have a lot of small businesses who employ a lot of people in our region, but I wouldn't consider those two to be small. So perhaps the author and I just have a different definition of what is a small business. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Mr. Skilbred? Thank you very much. Representative Lynchester.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a question for the testifier, but I do want to ask Representative Anderson a few questions, but I'm happy to wait until all the testifiers are done.
If we could, I'd like to get the folks to testify, and then we'll ask questions. You'll be first on the list. Okay, if we could please go to Mr. Mike Hickey. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. A lot of you are aware of NFIB, but we represent over 13,000 small businesses in Minnesota, and some of our best and most successful members are negatively impacted by what occurred in 2013. I want to thank Representative Anderson for bringing this bill forward. Mr. Chairman, members, when you look at the impact of the 2013 tax bill, I think this is probably one of the worst impacts we had in it. On a 9.85 rate, especially on successful entrepreneurs who employ a lot of people in the state. As you know, we quickly repealed some of the other controversial aspects of that law, but this remained. Obviously, Representative Anderson is doing this just for entrepreneurs. She's not doing this for all taxpayers. But this really sent a negative signal, we think, to the most successful small businesses who employ the most people. A lot of talk here about in small business at what level, but you know, somebody's paying that 5% rate and going broke, they're not employing many people, or they laid off a lot of people and they may shut the doors next month. I mean, this is aimed at the people who are employing the most, and that's why we really thought it was a negative signal that was sent, and giving us the fourth highest income tax rate in the country is not going to do anything to persuade a successful small business to expand here, to grow here, and some people are going to react the opposite. They're going to start looking at, can I expand somewhere else, even though I prefer to continue to provide good paying jobs in my home community. The Department of Revenue did an analysis on how much revenue was coming in from this tax increase, and the vast majority of income paid by flow-through companies being paid by people who are affected by this. It's not a huge number, obviously, and some people are making points about, the common small business in some areas of rural Minnesota, were not negatively impacted, but the people who were impacted by this pay a lot of the revenue. And that shows they're employing people. You're not paying a huge amount of revenue if you're not employing people. And so overall, we thought this was a very negative thing to do, especially for successful entrepreneurs. And I think this is something we'd really like to erase from the 2013 tax bill. And I want to thank Representative Anderson again for bringing it forward.
Any questions for Mr. Hickey, Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hickey, what What's the distribution of your membership across the state? And what's the definition, your definition, your organization's definition of small business? We've got some from here and some from Ms. Representative Anderson. And so what is your definition?
Mr. Hickey?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, there's a lot of definitions. The federal goes up to 500. Our average member has 12, but we've got members with greater than 100, but our average is 12. But the federal definition is a lot higher than the state statutory definition. You'll find small business exemptions for 15, 20, 50 in state statute. But so there's various definitions.
Representative Earhart?
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I'm asking is your membership, not given definitions out of the statute book. But what your average income is, you know what your income distribution is among your membership, certainly. And the second thing is, where are your members? Are they all in rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota, or are they all in metro area?
Mr. Hickey?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I don't know their income distribution at all. And that's between them and their accountant. But it's about half and half, maybe more like 60%. Rural, 40% or so metro. Although metro is growing and growing. I mean, I don't know if you're counting 7 county or 11. I mean, this is not the majority of small businesses, clearly, but the important thing to keep an eye on, this is the most successful who employ the most people. And that's why this is an important bill.
Representative Earhart?
I think that's a kind of a not inappropriate, it's just not adequate answer, but I'll let it go.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hickey, I think once again we're getting things confused, because there's nothing that I can see in this bill, unless I've misunderstood it, that ties the tax relief to employment. And so you could be a sole proprietor making that, you know, $250,000, $500,000, and qualify for this tax benefit. You could be outsourcing all of your computer programming to some country overseas. There's nothing in here that I can see that ties any benefit to the Minnesota economy, even though the arguments that you're presenting do that. And I'm assuming that the numbers that you were throwing out on 12 or 25 or 50 or whatever, that was not thousands, that was employees. And yet, am I correct that there's nothing that ties this bill and the tax break to the employment of people in Minnesota?
Mr. Hickey?
Oh, no, not directly in the legislation, but there's certainly a correlation. If you have, I mean, unless you're somebody doing something unique, like a broker, a financial advisor, or whatnot, you know, working in a very small office, generally employment size, and you know, there's real correlation with revenue for a company. And revenue can have a real impact on taxes, obviously. So, I mean, you can have some, you know, unique situations where somebody has no employees, or they have one, or they're a highly paid professional doing something unique. But generally, you know, very small businesses don't have real high incomes across the board, and the bigger small businesses do have higher incomes and do employ more people.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I made my point.
Any other questions for Mr. Hickey? Seeing none, we will go on to our next testifier. We'll go to Deb McMillan, Twin West Chamber. Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Good morning. I'm Deb McMillan. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. We represent about 600 businesses in the metro area of Minnesota.
Welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you. I'd like to use my time this morning to read some testimony from one of my members who couldn't be with us today. This gentleman is Steve Wise, and he is the president and principal at Cast Screw Machine Products in Brooklyn Center. They're an advanced manufacturer making products for customers like Toro and Polaris, and they take care of 123 families within their walls. The subject of pass-through income is sometimes hard to understand, and I've had more than one loan officer raise an eyebrow when they look at my family's taxable income and wonder why we need a loan. My wife and I look great on paper as the income from my business passes through our personal income tax forms, but that figure is deceiving. Understanding how this mechanism works, we never see the business income come into our house. My business declares a distribution for us to pay the tax burden, and only the tax burden, which we experience on the pass-through portion. So whatever tax we owe, that's what gets distributed out. So the profits from the business get figured out and tacked onto our joint income, and then we pay the tax on the total. Here's an example. If I have $100,000 and my wife has $100,000 in taxable income, we will owe $13,912 in 2015 income tax solely on our salaries. Now, if my business has a good year and I had to pass through $250,000 in income in 2015, that additional income will cost my business $23,459.80. This is $3,834.80 more than it would have owed without the 9.85% top tier tax, 2% higher than the former tier. This theoretical $3,800 would never have left my building had it not been for that top tax bracket. It would have been plowed back in as wages, bonuses, benefits, and capital expenditures, something to keep my business afloat and keep my employees working. The $3,800 is another fixed expense that somebody is expecting my people to work harder, longer, and leaner to cover. I'm respectfully asking that you consider an exemption for a portion of the pass-through income that we would be subjected to the highest tax. My customers won't let me raise prices just because I live in a state that unapologetically says it will never be a low-tax state. But I compete around the country for business, and my savvy customers know where the low-cost states are. Minnesota got a grade for F on the business tax climate in a recent study by the Center for Business and Economic Research, and the top-tier pass-through mechanism is one of the reasons why. Please help our state stop being an outlier when it comes to tax climate and stop heaping burdens on our businesses.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Knobloch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This may be more of a question for Ms. Manzi, but going back to the earlier question, I have just a question about the bill so I understand it. As I understand it, this is going to give a tax break to people who are actively involved in the business as opposed to someone who is just a investor, let's say, and not actively involved in the business. Is that correct, Representative Anderson or Ms. Manzi?
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knobloch, yes, that's correct.
And Ms. Manzi, Mr. Chair, what's the definition? I know the IRS has one, but what is the definition of an active employee? I believe it's you need to put a certain number, several hundred hours or something like that, into the business per year. Do you know what the definition is for this bill and how much you'd have to work to be treated as a active employee who is getting this tax break versus just a mere investor?
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knobloch, it wouldn't be an employee, but rather the business owner who would be getting the tax break. And the definition used in this bill is by reference to the Internal Revenue Code definition of a person who materially participates in the business, and I do not know what that is offhand. Mr. Michael may, or we can look it up for you and send it to you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Manzi.
Any other questions for Ms. McMillan? Okay, thank you very much. The last folks will have testify, Beth Cadoon from the Chamber, Minnesota Chamber, and Mike Jorgensen from Impressions, Inc. What is Impressions, Inc.?
We're a fold and carton manufacturer, printer.
Impression. Oh, I thought impression, you might be able to help me, but apparently not. That might take a big business. Well, whatever. Okay, so Ms. Cadoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. To answer Representative Earhart's question, we're about equal between greater Minnesota and the metro area. 80% of our membership has employees of 100 and less. We are here in strong support of House File 63. Thank the chair for hearing it, as well as Representative Sarah Anderson for bringing this forward. One thing that we consistently hear from our membership across the state of Minnesota is that Minnesota is a great place to live and work. However, what we also hear is that our business tax climate is challenging, that our taxes are one of the key impediments when you ask them about their ability to grow in the state. And this is consistent as well as when you look at our national tax rankings, when we rank amongst the worst in the nation, 47th worst on the Tax Foundation Index, 49th worst on the Small Business Tax Index. So when you look at our competitiveness of our business climate, unfortunately, we have kind of a worsening tax climate. And this is a challenge for our business community. When you look at just for our pass-through entities, one reason that we rank poorly in a lot of these indexes is our tax on the high individual income tax rate at that 9.85. We're fourth highest in the nation, second highest at some income levels. And because that is because the great majority of businesses are pass-through entities. Over 90% of businesses in the state are pass-through entities. Those are your sole proprietors, your LLCs, your S-corps, partnerships. And so when we have the fourth highest individual income tax rate in the nation, that means we have the fourth highest pass-through rate in the nation as well. The other thing you'd keep in mind is that pass-through entities are really a growing part of our business sector. And this is true not just in Minnesota, but nationally over the past few decades. Now over about 55% of the private sector in Minnesota is employed by pass-through entities. So this is really a key part of our business climate and our business entities. And so we want to make sure they're as strong as possible. One thing that's talked about is that phantom income. A lot of the income that's received by businesses are then plowed back into the business. This is the income that's used to reinvest in their company and their employees. It's cash flow they need to run their business. And so when you tax more of that income, that means there's less income available to reinvest in their company. Like I said, we've heard from our business community, both in greater Minnesota and in the metro area, that it's very important to become more competitive in this area. And if we can reduce that tax burden, it does help them grow jobs in their company in the state. With that, I'll turn it over to Mike Jorgensen so you can actually hear from a company that is a pass-through entity. The story you're going to hear from Mike is a similar story we've heard from other companies, both in the metro and greater Minnesota, on how this really worked for pass-through. Thank you.
State your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Okay, Michael Jorgensen. I'm the president and co-owner, part owner of Impressions Incorporated. We are a folding carton manufacturer, printer, located in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
All right, thank you for having me. I don't know, I didn't get a lot of time to prepare for coming down here this morning, so I threw some notes together fairly quickly to try and share with you the story of a company like Impressions Incorporated. As I said, we are a folding carton manufacturer. We make paperboard boxes for what you call CPGs, consumer packaging goods companies. It's the stuff you see Walgreens, Walmart, Target, retail-type packaging primarily. We also do a lot of cartons for medical device companies. We were a commercial printer. Commercial printing has pretty much gone away, although it's still around. Companies don't use brochures, they use the internet. We made a difficult and very expensive transition back in the 90s when we saw what was coming and we were able to successfully become a folding carton manufacturer. Whole new business, although printing was the same, the converting and everything else was different, but we were able to make that transition prior to a lot of businesses moving to other countries where a lot of the manufacturing base, the companies that we target, now make their product. Impressions Incorporated has two facilities. Our headquarters are in St. Paul, Minnesota in the Westgate area. We also have a facility in Hutchinson, Minnesota. That particular facility serves a 3M tape plant in that area. In 2014, the year just closed, we had $42 million in sales. We employ 300 people with outstanding wages and benefits. It's a highly skilled, competitive industry. On the scale nationally, $42 million company would be considered small. We compete against billion-dollar companies. We sell to billion-dollar companies. We buy from billion-dollar companies. We're a very small player. We are a pass-through entity. To be more exact, Impressions Incorporated is an S-Corp. Any taxes that are raised or applied to us end up in, we either spend less, we invest less in the future, or we can pass along the difference to our customers, which I can tell you we can't. Our pricing is locked down. We cannot raise our pricing on anything. We have held our pricing consistent for now almost 10 years. So any type of gains that we have to make in profits are strictly through productivity. And we're proud of our people because they've been very cooperative. We have an outstanding group of people, 300 employees. We have to watch our finances very closely. We print out monthly statements. We see amazing swings depending on our business cycles. The months of November 2008 to April 2009, we lost over $1.2 million during the recession. We have high fixed costs. 50% of our product is outside costs, and we didn't lay off a single person. We didn't cut a single salary. We took that hit because we had cash reserves. We were able to survive a very difficult recession. We're not real excited about the future right now. We finished the year at $42 million. I'm projecting next year a slight decline to maybe around $41 million. Capital expenses last year, $2.84 million in equipment investment. 2013 was around 1.3. 2002, 3.1 million. 2011, 1.3. 2010, 3.7 million. So dramatic swings depending on what we need at a given point. For next year, we know we need a new roof on our building. Our building goes back to 1991. We have 21 roof units, HVAC units that may need replacing. And we continually have to invest in new equipment to compete against it's a very complex, difficult marketplace. A single printing press can cost as much as $4 million. Those printing presses, by the way, come from Germany, in case you're not aware. Our die-cutting equipment is primarily Swiss. We also are looking into expansion. We have to carry a lot more finished goods material than we ever had to carry before. We have to carry a lot more raw material. So even with declining sales, we are looking at the possibility that a certain portion of our business may have to expand beyond our current location. We are seriously looking elsewhere, out of state. High taxes do affect Impressions Incorporated. As along with that is, where do our customers come from? I would say, you know, the definition of a small company, the IRS looks at a company our size as being a small company. And as I said, we do buy from, we do compete against large companies. So it is a very competitive marketplace out there. And we have to compete against some of the biggest companies calling on Fortune 500 companies. One of our biggest, or actually our biggest company by far, you probably recognize this logo. This is a new business that we gained within the last 3 years that has been a dramatic improvement in our sales bottom dollar. Every one of these boxes goes to Iowa. That even though you've got a large corporation headquartered here, their base of operations is in the state of Minnesota, we have seen them expand dramatically out of state. In 1987, when they moved to establish their facility in Austin, Texas, that cost us over $1 million in business over a two-year period. It was very difficult to make that up. So most of the production now that we are producing is being done not in the state of Minnesota. It's being done outside of Minnesota. Customers pursuing new accounts. Last year, we added this account, Motorrad, Mount Carmel, Illinois, Princeton, Indiana, Monterey, Mexico. That's where we send the product. Just a brand new little fun of an account. We were able to get this one. This is ginseng, little tablets. We were going to California pursuing these startups, and most of these businesses actually also do not pack it here in this domestically. This particular product is packed in Indonesia. Airborne effervescent, this is going away. These folks were acquired by Reckitt, a global company headquartered in England. The product is packed and manufactured here in Minnesota and Plymouth. They're losing all of this business, as are we. So $1 million of business will be gone within the next year. I have to replace that. I have to call on new accounts. I don't call on Minnesota accounts anymore because the CPGs aren't here. They're not locating here. They're going elsewhere. So beyond the impact of the tax, and by the way, doing a quick calculation for us, it's at least $64,000. So you are talking some fairly significant amount of dollars. It isn't anything that's light. And, you know, from a standpoint, from a business owner standpoint, somebody who I would like to at least convey to you that we do truly care a lot about providing jobs. We care about employees. It was very important to us to survive this recession, to keep them. We're proud of that. It's maybe our proudest moment. But moving forward, we do have some challenges. But a lot of times it gets these feelings that this income that we're talking about is not my take-home salary. This is Impressions Incorporated working capital. This is the money we take, and we put it back into our company to hire people, to expand our business, to deal with a lot of uncertainty over the coming year. This isn't stuff that we spend on luxury items or hoarding cash. This is real operating working capital that we need to operate our business and grow. So I guess, you know, that's a very quick synopsis of a lot of activity that's been happening, but I do want to state the point that Minnesota is not the easiest place for a company like us to operate, and it's not easy to find companies that we seek to find as potential customers here as well. I thank you very much for your time this morning.
Any questions for Ms. Cadoon or Mr. Jorgensen, Representative Moline?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Jorgensen. Thanks for coming in and sharing your testimony. That was interesting, and I appreciate your commitment to your employees, too. I did have a question about the when you were explaining that some of the people that you service are no longer going to be doing business in Minnesota, like the Airbon, Effervescent. If you could just explain why they wouldn't be doing business in Minnesota today and how you think this bill would change that.
Mr. Jorgensen?
Yes, thank you. That's a good question. This bill, other bills, everything goes into play as far as companies deciding where they're going to locate. My experience is that Minnesota is not considered a friendly manufacturing state. You look at a lot of the Fortune 500 corporations that are headquartered here, and I think one of the most telling examples is a very large medical device company that, besides their issues of moving their operations overseas, they do not manufacture hardly a single product in this state. I don't know how many people are aware that although the corporate headquarters may be here, their officers may be here, the states they go to make stuff which provide working class jobs, people with high school education. Those are elsewhere, and I believe it's because of the state is not a business-friendly state, at least for manufacturing. That's my experience.
Ms. Rochelle-Moline?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jorgensen, maybe I'm just confused. I thought, did your business do the printing for Airbon Effervescent?
Yes, it does.
Jorgensen?
Okay. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And so were the costs of contracting with you too high for them to stay here? Is that why they're going out of state? I'm just trying to figure out how taxes is impacting their decision to go out of state. Were you required to increase costs for them?
The company that we print for is moving out of state. Their reasoning is it's a global company. It's Reckitt out of the UK. They're shutting down their manufacturing operations here, but they were contracting out through a third-party manufacturer. The actual formula they used to make that decision to move their manufacturing operations elsewhere, I don't know exactly the details of what they are. Taxes could have been part of that equation, but ultimately both the company that makes the actual product and the company that makes the boxes, as well as several other companies that support that particular operation, will all lose business because of that. So whether it was taxes or not taxes, I can't state with any positive certainty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I just wanted to clear that up because there was mention of a couple businesses that were no longer going to be doing business in Minnesota, but there wasn't clarity that taxes had anything to do with those decisions, and it sounds like we don't have any more details on, you know, why exactly that they're not doing business in here, but I just wanted it to be clear for the public that that we don't have the exact information that's why those businesses are not doing business here in Minnesota anymore. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jorgensen?
We have non-disclosures in place with all of our clients because these particular products that we produce are at various stages of development, go out in the marketplace. For me, even coming here, even talking about some of our customers could be maybe going beyond the bounds that they cared for me to get into. So because of disclosure, non-disclosure, there's things that I can't share with you. So I just want to make sure that that is clear, that information that has been shared for me, shared to me with by my customers, I'm not allowed to discuss. So I can't be put into that position of stating why they said what they said unless they gave me the approval to do so, and they will not.
Representative Moline.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do just have one follow-up question then. You mentioned that you would save about $64,000 in taxes under Representative Anderson's bill. You mentioned that you needed a new roof, that you pay employees well and they have good benefits. And, you know, it sounds like perhaps, you know, some of the costs are being transferred to your customers. So with that $64,000, would your intent be to invest back in your business? Would it be to pass that savings on to your employees? Or would it be to decrease the cost that your customers incur by doing business with you? Because, of course, there's nothing in the bill that requires businesses to spend the money in any particular way. You know, I think of professional corporation law firms, partners, you know, they would be saving money under this as well, and those attorneys could keep the money for themselves or, you know, maybe do something else with it. So I'm just wondering, you listed a number of things that you would possibly do with the money, so, you know, I'm just kind of wondering how you would prioritize that.
Mr. Jorgensen?
I did the calculation just quickly because it came up with a figure being about $2,000. Where this money would go, I can't state specifically at this point, but I could assure you that any money that gained would go back into the company, and ultimately the net benefit would work to everybody's advantage, because as we do better as a company, our employees do better.
Representative Moline.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe just a comment for Representative Anderson, then she could maybe consider adding language that would require the money saved to be reinvested back into the business so we can, you know, get around situations like Representative Loeffler talked about where they're sole proprietors or professional corporations where we're just not sure how that money would be spent. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Lesch and then Drazkowski. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jorgensen, about 4 or 5 tax chairs ago, we had a man named Ron Abrams chairing the tax committee. And Representative Abrams, who's now moved on as a judge, I remember in my first term in the tax committee, he came in. He loved to read the Wall Street Journal and the Chicago Tribune and everything and bring this stuff in and see what was happening, the way business was going nationwide. And I remember one floor session, he came in and he was waving around a copy of the Wall Street Journal citing how China had 17 applications for companies to make boxes. And he said, you know what they're going to do with those boxes? They're going to put products in them. So this is just the tip of the iceberg to indicate where the strength of an economy was going. And he was lamenting the fact of the slowdown in manufacturing in Minnesota and how there was nothing. There were no applications or no companies, new companies, manufacturing boxes in Minnesota. So as a manufacturer of boxes, how's that going? Are we coming back around? Is it increasing? Or since those days 12 years ago, are we still suffering a slowdown in your business?
Mr. Jorgensen?
Yeah, that is an excellent question because, you know, they call it a variety of names. You know, it was called offshoring when businesses moved their manufacturing operations from this country to other areas. And we've actually seen the flight starting to the south, because I go back to the company, back to the 80s, and we saw a lot of businesses move out. I mentioned in Texas, a lot of businesses moved to Kentucky. Eventually, they just kept progressing out. In return, they're calling this onshoring, that businesses are making decisions to move back to the United States of America. And I can say that because of the higher wages in China, because of the time lag and the number of SKUs that companies are developing, I mean, it used to be a product like Coke sold Coke. Then you had Diet Coke, then you had Coke whatever, and Coke. They call it SKU proliferation. That has worked to our advantage because we have to produce more products at lower quantities advantage from a domestic standpoint, but from a cost standpoint, that's more complicated because you're constantly having to reset up your machines over and over again. I would say the simple short answer to that is that for certain specialty items, there is some interest again in moving product back to the United States to be manufactured, but from a scale globally, it's still very small. That a good percentage of manufacturing products like electronics, you know, you buy a computer, it's all packed there, the box comes from there. We'll never see that type of growth again in our particular industry. So I would say projections for folding cartons, you're talking 1% maybe annually, optimistic.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer, Mr. Jorgensen. I like to look at this stuff long term sometimes because I remember how we all talk about what we think the economy is going to do and try to set policy based on that. And I've been here long enough now where I think I can see some of the results, which may be good or bad, depending on your perspective. But is your concern with this onshoring that, let's say, a manufacturer moves out of Minnesota, whether it's boxes or anything else, but when they onshore again, you're concerned that maybe there's less likelihood that if they onshore, less likelihood that they onshore back to Minnesota because of your characterization of our tax climate. Would that be an accurate assessment?
Mr. Jorgensen?
That would be a very accurate assessment. If Impressions Incorporated were to start a business right now, we would consider moving to Kentucky, Tennessee, or somewhere in the southeast. A lot of that has to do with demographics, too. You've got some state issues, tax issues, you've got location of populations, but it all, I mean, as far as Minnesota goes, companies, my experience in talking with people, again, I have to be careful because I got non-disclosures, Minnesota isn't even on their map for expansion or coming back here as manufacturing. And this, again, is the CPG product, the stuff that you see on consumer shelves at retail outlets.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, Mr. Chair, I think this is one of the quandaries we suffer because Mr. Jorgensen had characterized that you know, this is his business, for example, isn't necessarily going to be hiring PhDs to operate the machines that fold boxes. And yet, in Minnesota, we're characterized as a high tax, high service state. I don't think we're necessarily producing a lot of students out of Minnesota who are going to be doing that. You know, we last year we passed the largest investment spending, however, what do you want to call it, $1 billion for the DMC, and that's attracting a certain type of worker. Box folding's attracting a certain type of worker as well. Probably not the high income workers that are going to be working at our investment in DMC. And I look at Minnesota, where we consistently have the highest ACT scores in the nation, and I think the money that we're spending from our tax revenue that's going to produce that caliber of student is probably going to be more likely to be working at something like an investment at DMC. And, Mr. Chair, you know I had my issues with DMC, but it is going to be supporting those workers that we produce in Minnesota a lot more. And then I hear about how easy it is to not just offshore, or if you're onshoring again, to go to a different state. And how are we going to compete with states that produce students that are good at turning screws faster than any other state? Whether it's Texas or China or Alabama, it is going to be difficult for us to compete with that. So, you know, I think the point that other members have made about where we're making that investment and a tax expenditure is well stated. Because are we going to support those businesses that do well in employing our exceptional students, where all of our kids are above average? Or are we going to try to compete with Mississippi or with some of those other states that are better at producing students that maybe aren't going to go work at Mayo Clinic? So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there, Ms. Chair, that I think we do well in making these policy decisions. Where are we directing this tax expenditure? Because whoever we spend it on, whether it's a box manufacturer or a broom manufacturer, everyone else, all of the rest of us have to pay for that. And if we're paying for it, our students are paying for it too, and we spend a lot of money on our students. So that's an investment as well. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the discussion has me kind of wondering. I know we read about Polaris a little while ago. I mean, they're here and they make snowmobiles. They're a Minnesota company. They're successful. And they're going to be expanding a facility to build four-wheelers. And they're going to Alabama. And as I read the article, I was just taken aback. 1,200 jobs or something like that? Why Minnesota wasn't even on the list of states that they were considering as they move to their new facilities. And so it's kind of, I think this discussion is very important, and I think that example is one that just sticks out very clearly in my mind of one that we're paying attention right now to an area, I think, that is very important to us economically. And as you look at those businesses, Mr. Chair, around the Polaris of the world, and should that Polaris have expanded here, the businesses that would benefit from the inputs directly and the outputs immediately, and the maintenance and other types of businesses around that facility, I just can't imagine many of those, Representative Anzell's small businesses as well. And I think that's maybe part of the answer to the question that you had earlier, is that small businesses are around to support those larger businesses, and they're affected directly by them as well. But that's not my question, Mr. Chair. My question is...
can you repeat your question?
You're doing good.
My question, Mr. Chair, is, and I don't know if this is for Mr. Jorgensen, Ms. Cadoon, Representative Anderson, or Mr. Michael, or Ms. Manzi, but this pass-through income, when these business owners are taxed on that income as it's invested back in their business, realizing it might be used to buy personal property for the business, or to buy a piece of real estate, or build onto with a building, or something like that, is it taxed again? When they realize capital gains from the portion of the property that still exists, are they exposed to income tax twice on that same money?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, if they reinvest this income in, for example, buy a machine or something like that, in general, because it was profits originally that tax was paid on it, that will be part of their basis. As they depreciate that over time, their basis goes down. And if they then dispose of the machine at a price that exceeds their basis, there will be capital gain. But the amount they invested will not be taxed again, because it will either be part of basis or will have been recovered as depreciation or Section 179 or something like that. So this income doesn't get taxed twice. Now, if it was a C corporation, and Polaris is, I think, a publicly held company, for example, so that's a C corporation, then it will be taxed once as profits in the C corp, and those retained profits make the company's stock more valuable or enable it to pay dividends, and then it will get taxed twice. So C corporations are at a bit of a disadvantage compared with the business entities that we're talking about here, which there's only one level of tax.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Michael, he nailed it, Mr. Chair, as always.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, can you tell me, if you want to share, how much do you guys pay in property taxes each year for your $42 million company?
Mr. Jorgensen.
Could I get back to you on that?
Sure.
Yeah.
You pay about $200,000.
I know we were
at least in St. Paul anyway.
We were featured in an article last year about the whole Westgate area, to what an advantage it has been to the city of St. Paul.
Yeah.
But I could give you, if you want that for the record.
No, I already have it. Thank you. I just wanted to know if you knew. So the point is, I represent the folks in Chisago County, and we're talking earlier about businesses not knowing if anyone leaves or not, and, you know, do they actually do that? Well, our former EDA director, who now I think is in Duluth, mentioned that 18 of the 20 businesses in the Osceola, Wisconsin Industrial Park are from Minnesota. And so a lot of that is income tax rates. A lot of it is property tax, the fact that we charge businesses twice as much as they do in Wisconsin. So I just want to get a sense for how much your property taxes were compared to your total revenue, because there are businesses that actually leave the state, and there are also businesses that actually threaten to leave, including, I think, one of probably the second largest amount of tax incentive we gave last session. We didn't give, but the legislature and Governor Dayton gave, was to a company that employs millionaires. You know, probably 80-90% of their payroll is given to millionaires, and these are billionaire owners that do that. So I'm a little confused by the discussion today. We're talking about, I think, 3,000 small businesses that could benefit from this, not one company in which we gave $500 million in tax incentive because they threatened to leave to California, even though California wasn't going to give them a dime of tax incentive. We gave them $500 million anyway. So this seems to be allocated to the right people, and I support it. So thank you.
Okay, with that, thank you very much. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, you weren't looking.
Jesse, to the witnesses.
You weren't looking to your left.
Representative Carlson.
But maybe that's
I'll work
part of
on
your
that,
political philosophy.
Carlson.
No, I just wanted to, you know, Polaris came up here, and I'm one that, with some of my investments and so on, although I'm not an investor in Polaris, follow the business pages pretty closely. And when they announced that they were going to Alabama, the stated reason for expanding in Alabama was closeness to the markets. And, you know, I suspect that plant, if I recall, is going to be mainly involved with ATVs. And if you travel through the South and so on, you've got a lot of military bases down there that are purchasing them, and as well as if they do any recreational ATVs, that particular area is, you know, with the mountains and so on, not far away where you see a lot of ATVs down there. But I'm not going to get involved with what they're manufacturing there, other than the quote by one of the leaders of Polaris was closeness to markets. That's what they were after. So I think we sometimes are debating things here back and forth without necessarily having what the true facts are. We're sharing a lot of what our opinions are. And I'm just basing my comments on a newspaper article, but it was a quote by the CEO or one of the leading administrators or leaders of the company. So with that, I'll stop.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Questions for Mr. Jorgensen or Ms. Cadoon? Representative Lancheski, are you waiting? Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Jorgensen.
Thank you. Just one last closing comment. One thing, as far as the manufacturing environment goes, I want to make sure that people understand that manufacturing is a very clean process, that you're dealing with a lot of sophisticated equipment and engineers and all sorts of people. And just it isn't just, you know, putting things in a box or making things. And I want to make that clear. And the point on access to market is definitely a problem that faces Impressions Incorporated. So on top of everything else, with Minnesota's question on how good of a business state we are, we do have to also face that reality is that we aren't as close to a lot of these markets, which is a reason, another reason why, in addition to the favorable business environment, that a lot of our targeted customers choose to expand and, you know, locate in areas, say, in the Southeast. So it definitely has an impact, and it's very complicated.
Okay, thank you. Questions for the author of the bill? I have first on my list, Carolyn Chesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson. And I know, you know, you and I have had many debates in the Tax Committee over the years, so I think we fundamentally just have different philosophies about this. But, you know, I agree with Representative Carlson. We've been spending a lot of time talking about things that really aren't about the bill. So I actually do want to talk about the bill a little bit. And that is, the, you know, members may not know that the amount of Minnesota returns in the entire state that have pass-through income is 4.4%. So that's all the total returns. We're already talking about just a small group of tax returns, 4.4%. And then the number of pass-through entities that would be affected by the fourth tier is 2.6%. So we talked about this on the House floor when we, the now minority, raised the fourth tier. And a lot of the argument was, you know, this will stifle all these businesses. And we highlighted repeatedly that it was going to affect 2% of businesses. And so, you know, we should just focus in on what this bill does. And this bill is, it is not, I guess, you know, some of the discussion that's happened about, you know, successful businesses, what is a successful business, and trying to measure that as a matrix of, is successful business one that makes a lot of money, or is it one that has a lot of employees, or, you know, everybody has a different view of that. But in the legislation, and this was raised, I think, by Representative Lean, really, and Representative Loeffler, there's no requirement, and what has not come up in this discussion today, to create a job to get this tax cut. And in past years, when people had introduced this bill and testified on this bill, they'd always say, this is for job creators. This will make people create jobs. Yet there's nothing in the legislation that requires that any of this tax cut be turned back into a job. I guess there's a hope and a prayer, but as Representative Moline pointed out, I mean, if you're the recipient of this tax cut, which costs, the revenue estimate, the next biennium would cost us $350 million just for these 2% of filers, and it would cost $400 million in the next biennium. And again, this is a very small subset of people who get passed through, who file pass-through returns. So we'd have to decide, you know, is that worth $750 million in our budget window for this super select group? We wouldn't require them to do anything. They could buy a yacht. They could put it, you know, into a vacation. They could put it back into the company. I know Governor Dayton in the past instead proposed a job credit instead. You know, if you show us you hired another person, and we'll give you a tax credit for that. But I, you know, I think we have to think about if the new majority is, if this is sort of a key part of the omnibus tax bill, you know, and I'm assuming it is because House File 1, which is the majority's premier bill, has this provision in it. It's structured differently, but that bill, which, you know, I look forward when we do hear it, Mr. Chair, it has, I think, six tax cuts in that bill in House File 1, and this is one of them, again, scheduled a little differently. You know, I just hope members will think long and hard about this legislation. You know, we could ask the nonpartisan staff, you know, what have other states done? What is their result? I think there's one state, and I would love to be told by staff, I think it's Kansas, who is doing this and is losing a lot of money because of it. So, you know, I know we have different philosophies. Some people think if you just give the wealthiest Minnesotans a tax cut, then that means that'll create jobs. But, you know, it's unclear in reading actual data that that's accurate. But even if you believe this is the way to go, you know, what I want to ask Representative Anderson, I mean, two questions really. One is a political question, which is, given that this was kind of the governor's premier issue, which was the fourth tier, and you'd be undoing it for a subset of people, you know, how do you think you're going to get the governor and the Senate on board on that? Just kind of a strategy there, maybe. And then I guess the other thing is, you know, the issue, even if I wanted to do this, and I don't, but if I did, you know, how do I explain to my constituents why only a small group of the pass-through folks get this benefit? First of all, why doesn't everybody else get it who has pass-through income? Why not cut it at the bottom rate? And then also, for folks who are in this income strata, which, you know, are quite a few of my constituents and yours, and agreed they're not really in rural Minnesota, they live in the metro, the people who earn these incomes, you'd have to be the owner to get this tax cut. And so, you know, just walking through an example in my district, if you own the law firm, And so for Representative Anderson, you know, maybe if you could help me think through, you know, strategy for passage, but also, you know, how do you explain this to your and my constituents if they are attorneys at a law firm and they earn this income, they earn because to qualify you have to earn $258,000. So again, I mean, I think there is a geographic argument here. It's who earns $258,000 is who we're talking about as a couple, and I think it's like $150,000 as a single, but I'd have to look that up. So if you work at a law firm, so when I talk to attorneys in my district, if you work there and you earn $258,000, you and your spouse, you wouldn't get this tax cut, but if you own it, you would. Or if you're a radiologist in a clinic, but you don't own the clinic, so let's say there's 20 radiologists reading CAT scans and MRIs and whatever, and you know these are mostly people in the metro, just the owner of that clinic would get the tax cut, but the radiologist who works there would not. And it, you know, I'm interested to know why we would give a tax benefit to folks at the $258,000 just to our owners, and without requiring them to create a job or invest that tax cut in any way, but not to the employees who make the identical income.
Could you repeat the question?
She got it.
Oh, you got it. You're okay?
I'm good.
Okay. Chair Anderson, it would be my intention. Are there other members who want to ask questions on this? Because we're not voting on it today. And Speaker Dowd does start the floor at noon, so I would like some time to get over there because I'm getting old and I'm slower than I used to be. I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lencheski. I value your thoughts on this, considering the time that you have spent chairing this committee and the important work that we have before us, because this is basically where we get all of our funding from, is from the tax committee. So couple of things on your first question you had asked, how do I get Governor Dayton on board with this? And I just have to look to last year, 2014. I was very pleased that he recognized the disastrous effects of the warehouse tax and what that impact had on the state of Minnesota. And we heard right here in this committee one of the warehouse facilities tell us that within that short period of time, they did what they told us they were going to do, and they opened up a facility in Iowa, a facility that would have been here in the state of Minnesota. And they moved that business part out of the state of Minnesota, along with the jobs that came with it. And the governor recognized that this was not smart tax policy for the state and reversed that. And I know it is my hope that he will recognize that there are different ways and different approaches that we can take to tax policy in the state of Minnesota that will help people grow jobs in the state. And we also only have to look, in 2011, the governor made the suggestion of exempting this income from taxes. And that was a statement he made in 2011. So this is not a foreign concept to him. He has shown that he is willing to look at tax policy and say, hey, maybe we need to do it differently. So I don't think that that's an uphill ask, a big ask to ask of him to do this. But on top of this, I like all of the things that you suggested, Representative Lencheski, of all those tax breaks and making it more accessible. And if our budget allows us to put more money back in the hands of Minnesotans so that they can be investing the money and they can be creating the jobs and our families in the state can be benefiting from that, that's great. Have at it. If we can do it within our budget, I think that's great. This is a starting point, and I welcome the suggestions that you've all made here today. I'll be sharpening my pencil, taking a look at what we can do, although I'm at the mercy of the chair. So it'll be ultimately what we as a committee put together. I appreciate your feedback on this. But when you're looking at, you're talking 33,000 Minnesotans that are going to benefit from this, I think that's a good start. And I look forward to at least giving some relief, giving a ray of hope that Minnesota is not going to be an outlier, that Minnesota is not going to be a state where it's not friendly to business, whether you're manufacturing or otherwise, and that we can be a state that businesses can come to, they can stay, and they can grow and be successful. And that helps all of us in the entire state. So that's my hope.
Chair Lencheski, follow-up.
Mr. Chair, only in closing, just, you know, recall in the Ways and Means Chair is here, and you're here, Mr. Chair, so you know perfectly well that when we cut for one, the rest of everyone else has to pay for it. So no tax cuts are free, and it is true. It's 33,000 individuals, but it'd be paid for by everyone else. And I think Representative Lesh made that point earlier. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your wrap-up, Chair Anderson. The discussion has begun. and the discussion will continue. So I will lay over House File 63 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Anderson. Thank you, testifiers. Look at the agenda for the next couple days. Good government all the time. We're adjourned.